point the nose at them and let the tech geek's laser system acquire them. I know. I flew the simulator, Obi. I just don't want those fighters to shoot us down before we nail the missiles. Kaufman stared at her. She looked like a little kid sitting in the pilot's chair with the safety harness over her shoulders and the big white flight helmet sitting on her head like some ostrich egg. He knew he shouldn't say it, but Kaufman didn't care anymore. What the hell, he thought, we're going to get our asses shot off anyway. So he said, maybe I should take over now. I've had more experience handling this bird. I can... No. But you don't... The look on Colonel Christopher's face could have etched solid steel. Obi, I'm the pilot here. That's that. No further discussion. He wanted to spit, but instead he shrugged inside his safety harness and said nothing. The plane droned on for a few moments. Then Christopher asked mildly, "You ever read Moby Dick, Obi?" Puzzled, he replied, "Saw the movie, I think." "You remember where Ahab tells his first mate, 'There's one God in heaven and one captain of the Pequod.'" Kaufman felt his cheeks redden with anger. "That's the way it's got to be, Obi. I didn't ask for this job, but I've got it. Now let's do what we're here to do." O'Banion's voice crackled in his earphone. "Message incoming from the Gooks, Colonel." "Let's hear it." The same calm, reedy voice they had heard before said, "Unidentified aircraft. This is Air Defense Command of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea. You have invaded DPRK airspace. You will follow the two fighter planes we have dispatched and land at their base. If you fail to do so, they have orders to shoot you down. They are armed with air-to-air missiles. You will execute this order now." San Francisco, the Cow Palace. Vicky leaned her elbows on her knees and peered down at the platform where the president was supposed to speak.
"How long is it going to be?" she asked no one in particular. "These seats hurt my backside."
Sylvia tried to smile at her elder daughter.
"Just be patient. It's not every day you get to see the President of the United States in person." "With 10 zillion other people," Vicky muttered.
"I think it's cool," said the niece, sitting on Sylvia's other side. "Nobody else from my class is here, I bet."
"So what?" said Vicky, with the airy disdain of the senior sibling. "He's a drip anyway."
"He's the president," Sylvia snapped, shocked. "Show some respect."
"He said he was going to do a lot for education," Vicky retorted. "I haven't seen any improvements. Have you, Dee?"
Denise thought a moment, then replied,
"Well, we got more money for the school orchestra. Big deal."
"They were going to have to close it down altogether," Denise pointed out.
"But it wasn't federal money," Vicky countered. "That extra money came from Sacramento." "Did not. Did too."
Sylvia swiveled her head right and left as the sisters argued back and forth, suppressing an urge to grab the two of them by the scruffs of their necks and wrap their skulls together. Norman Foster appraised his boss with an experienced eye. "He's winding himself up tighter," thought the president's chief of staff. "He gets high on moments like this. The crowd, the cameras, the band playing, and people getting to their feet and cheering. Hell, it gives me a thrill. It's positively invigorating for him." The president was pacing briskly up and down the little bare-walled room where they waited for the ceremonies to begin. Senator Eumanns was beside him, scurrying breathlessly to keep up with his long-legged strides. She would introduce the president after her own speech. The agenda gave her 5 minutes.